حفظها. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته. And السلام عليكم to your listeners.
We commence with Jordan. We understand that there's delightful news for the region as a planet has now been named after a Jordanian teenager. Tell us more.
That's right. I think we always look at just the very much so the politics and humanitarian issues, and while those are of greatest importance, there are other things happening in the region as well that we need to remember, that Muslims are making strides in many different fields. 19-year-old Salahuddin Abu al-Sheikh has now had a planet, a minor planet named after him. In 2013, he took part in an international science and engineering fair, and this was for his mathematical science project. The competition was held in Arizona in the States, and he received second place. And this then prompted NASA to give his name to a minor planet. He attended the King Hussein Foundation's Jubilee School. He was a graduate from there. And he was actually 15 years old when he started working on the project. It took him an entire year. He presented his research to the University of Jordan. He received full marks, and then he entered into the science fair itself. There were participants, more than 1,500 of them, from over 70 countries. And of course, he was speechless when he received this honor, and he now has a small planet, a minor planet named after him, the planet called Planet Salahuddin.
Very interesting indeed. Now, in terms of Iran, Saudi Arabia and China, you've been closely following up the warming of relations between Tehran and Beijing. What are your observations?
Well, I find that when it comes to Iran itself, Iran's geography makes it so much more important as a link between the Arab world, you know, as compared to, for example, Saudi Arabia. When you look at China's Silk Road plan, Iran is much more important in the role that it plays. Now, we know that China's President Jinping visited the Middle East for the first time in 7 years that a Chinese leader did so, and that there were billions of dollars worth of agreements that were signed up. But there was also a tenfold expansion of trade with Iran that's going to take place over the next 10 years. So the importance of commerce between China, its alignment with Iranian interests, are far more important than Saudi Arabia itself. We know that China in recent years have been very concerned about what they believe is the alleged Saudi funding of Islamic schools or madrasas amongst the Uyghur militants, as they call them, but that Saudi Arabia has continuously denied any support of the Uyghurs and says that they simply are involved in terms of facilitating Hajj arrangements and flights for them. When we look at China itself, their biggest worry in the Middle East is not oil, it's Saudi Arabia. So when we consider that for China, when they're dealing with Iran itself, there's no what they regarded as hostile militancy or any type of religious affiliations. For them, their link to Iran is very economic, and it's very geopolitical based on where Iran is situated. You know, many of the Middle Eastern analysts have been looking back to another visit, and that was Ayatollah Khamenei's visit in 1989, when he had an official visit to China, and there was a warming of relations. But politically, China also supports Syria, Iran-backed regime of Syria, and they favor the Russian intervention of Syria. So here again, they're at odds with Saudi Arabia on a military level, military intervention. When it comes to the lifting of sanctions, China has already stepped up their naval cooperation with Iran. Very few media houses reported on the visit to Iran last year by the Chinese admiral, and he represented the country itself. They discussed intelligence sharing, cyber warfare, and counter-terrorism as well. And this was already in October of last year, before sanctions were dropped itself. Iran expects to boost their oil exports to about 500,000 barrels a day, and much of it is going to go to China. Iran's oil plans will then put in direct competition with Saudi Arabia, who was before this one of China's largest suppliers. So as much as China says that they're not going to get involved on a social, religious, humanitarian, political level, well, the way that the Middle East is at the moment in its most volatile situation, they're left with no option but to get involved. Iran's border, if we look at it geographically, it borders on Central Asia, Turkey, the Caucasus, and it's a much more important link than Saudi Arabia in China's Silk Road plans, and even in the One Road, One Belt initiative that we've been speaking about in the last few months. So as a result, China's interests are gradually forcing it to, shall we say, realign its policies and its relationships in the region. And if China is going to do so and wants to remain a world power and grow as one, then it will start realizing that it cannot remain aloof and it cannot stand by a statement that it is not involved and will not involve itself geopolitically. Because it is, whether individuals, players in the region like it or not, China is going to be a very formidable force in 2016 and in years to come in the Middle East and North Africa.
Picking up on what you mentioned earlier on, Hafidha, where does this leave that whole debate about who will become the dominant power in the region long term between Iran and Saudi Arabia? We know Saudi Arabia was on very strong footing, but the U.S. has also decreased the tension between itself and Iran. Is this just a short term thing, or is this pretty much likely to go the distance?
One wonders, but most likely, looking at how Middle East issues are playing out, it will go much longer distance. I think we can see China and Russia perhaps teaming up, and if that does happen on a geopolitical level, we're going to see them a much stronger force to reckon with as opposed to Saudi Arabia on its own. But we're also going to look at Saudi Arabia very carefully, because King Salman's son, who is in charge now, who has gone all out with battle and war against Yemen, we're going to see him playing out his cards, and one wonders how he will do so. Unlike previous ministers of such high ranking who had very close ties with the United States, with other parts of Europe, and even Russia, for example, he has none of that. He was schooled and educated, university educated locally. His affiliations are more local based. He's got to watch out for stirrings within his own country, the region itself, oil issues itself, the price of oil, the plunging of the oil price. All of that puts Saudi Arabia in a very precarious situation. They will have to play cards very carefully and have to see whether they're going to make Russia and China a part of their allegiance in the coming months and years, or if they choose to stand alone. And if they do, then which countries in the region are going to give them any backing? Libya is up in, is devastated by war and civilian issues as well as tribal war. Egypt can't really help much, can it? It's got its own issues and its plate is quite full. So it leaves us very much with Saudi Arabia standing alone, unless, of course, GCC countries stand up to help them.
Indeed. Hafidha, jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated.
You're most welcome. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was Radio Islam International's Hafidha Rehana Omar with this week's Middle East.